Kazak, Luka Modrić, gol!
Welcome to the Three Beards World Cup Podcast. I am your host, Todd Miller. I'm here with Dr. Pete of Tottenham Fandom, and we are going to go over, what do you think, like mostly round two? Most of round two.
Yeah, we've got quite a few games to go over, a lot of exciting action. Big deal Argentina game that we're going to spend a lot of time on, obviously.
Yep, that's the big one. I want to talk a little bit about penalties before we get into that, Dr. Pete. So everybody knows there's been a ton of penalties called. 12 so far in this one, and the record is 18, and it looks like we're going to break that record. Do you think that VAR, I mean, obviously VAR has had a huge part of that. Do you think that it hurts the games in that some of the smaller teams can just wait around and basically hang in the game and hope for a penalty kick?
No, I don't think so. I was wondering that before, but you have to remember that you're also going to have some penalty kicks overturned, like the Brazil game where Neymar takes a flop, gets a penalty kick initially, and the penalty kick gets taken away. So I think you're going to end up, when all is said and done, with a few more penalty kicks than you might have had otherwise. But when you look at all the penalty kicks in the tournament so far, most of them are legitimate penalty kicks. It's just really poor defending.
I mean, the penalty kicks so far, we've seen a lot of them. Is that the theme to you? To me, it is so far, but I can see a couple other things coming out. What's the theme of the World Cup so far to you?
I couldn't even whittle it down to one theme. I think two things really have stuck out to me so far. One is absolutely atrocious defending all over the World Cup, and that has resulted in many penalties, and it's resulted in a lot of easy goals given, a lot of own goals.
Yeah.
The other theme, I would say, is very organized and hardworking underdogs have really upset the normal powers that dominate the World Cup.
Yeah, I saw that as well. And of course, Argentina has to be at the forefront of that. Couple other things you could probably choose. For me, goalkeepers having no command of their area. We talked about this several times. But there's been a lot of goals on dead balls, not just penalty kicks, but over the 50% of the goals have been scored on dead balls, a lot of corner kick goals, a lot of crosses that are dropping inside the six that are not being challenged by the goalkeepers or goalkeeper mistakes. And it's funny to me that you're not really hearing a lot about these being goalkeeper mistakes. We talked about the Alisson play with the Swiss center forward banging in a header basically 3 feet away from him, dead center, inside his six. And it doesn't seem to me that people are picking up on this, but I think there's been a lot of goalkeeper mistakes from David De Gea to Willy Caballero.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm struggling to think of a goalkeeper other than Navas, who has really excelled and won the game for their team, whereas previous tournaments, I think you saw a handful of goalkeepers who excelled and advanced their teams in the next rounds. And it's just been bad in the back in general. Goalkeepers, defenders, and as a lifelong defender, it makes me sick, Thomas.
Yeah, I can definitely see that side of it. Did you see that Neymar changed his haircut?
Yeah.
It could be after all the memes of like spaghetti on top of people's heads and like that kind of thing.
Some really good memes out there. And actually, I saw that. Did you know that he has two hairstylists that he brought to the World Cup with him?
I've always heard that he has a hairstylist that goes with him everywhere. I didn't know there was two, but it's not a surprise, I guess.
Yeah, it's not just one that goes with him. It's one apparently for the styling and then one for the coloring. But he's got more hairstylists than goals so far.
Oh, I think that's terrible. Let's get into the goals, Dr. Pete.
Hey, can we say one more thing about penalty kicks real quick?
Yeah,
this has bothered me. It bothered me during the Premier League season, too, this year. So you've talked a lot about the stats behind penalty kicks, and the conversion rate's about 75 to 80%, give or take.
Yeah.
So explain to me, when a player has a ball hit him in the arm or hand, and a lot of times it can be the ball is headed in, his arms up in the air, or the ball is driven, you know, 80 miles an hour and he doesn't get his arm out of the way. Why does a team deserve to get a penalty kick or basically three quarters of a goal for someone heading the ball into someone's hand when they're, you know, 2 feet away? The whole idea of the handball has gotten way out of control in the sense that the word intentional has been completely taken out of it. And they're just giving handballs for anything that hits anybody's hand in the box. Why is that worth three quarters of a goal?
It's a little better than it used to be. They will, in general, not give penalty kicks for, like, a guy that's sliding and, say, a ball is being crossed in from the byline and he's sliding and it hits his hand. In general, they won't give that. But you're right. There's still a lot of gray area there. We talked about it in our EPL show with, you know, Arsenal had a bunch of
penalty kicks. Yeah, there was a horrible Arsenal one from the season where the guy just had his hand up and the guy headed it into his hand. And he was in, it wasn't exactly a natural position, but I don't understand that that is not a goal-scoring play necessarily. And they give him a penalty kick for it, and you're basically giving him a goal. It makes no sense to me. How is that worth three quarters of a goal?
You make a really good point there, because it wouldn't be that difficult to have an inadvertent handball be like a indirect free kick.
Yeah, give something, you know, else.
Especially if it's not denial of a goal scoring opportunity, you could create a separate category for that, where the Luis Suarez play where he, you know, ball's smashed at him and he volleyball bats it away.
Yeah, that's what it's designed for. And that's, you give him a red card. The same thing with the Colombia play 2 minutes into that game. That deserves a penalty kick and a red card.
No, I agree with you. I think you should take this to the top. I'll be honest with you. I think you should take this to the top.
I'm taking it to the VAR war room where the referees are wearing full match kit.
I love that they're wearing the match kits, man. Full, I love that.
Match kit 100 miles away from the stadium. And I love that there are cameras on the refs who are watching the cameras on the field. I mean, how fun is that?
I think it's really fun that they all have full match kits on.
Do you think they're wearing cleats?
I don't know. They have the socks, so they might be. I do like that a lot, and we've seen them a lot. I think that VAR actually has been really successful, and I've been happy about how quickly it's moved. It's the guy, the referee will make the box sign. He'll jog off the field, and honestly, like, they're done in like under 20 seconds.
Everybody was concerned about them taking a long time, but that hasn't been an issue. And they've gotten most of the calls right. They've missed some calls on VAR, but I would say that they've missed less calls this World Cup than they have in previous ones, just eyeballing it.
I would agree. It has made the game better. Whether or not it's changed the game, you know, with smaller teams trying to get penalty kicks and with more flopping, that kind of remains to be seen, right?
We'll see. The stats will bear it out, and there will be some adjustments.
Exactly.
You know, over the next 4 to 5 years as all the leagues get it and players adjust accordingly. But I think so far, so good. Now, in the knockout rounds, you know, something's going to happen. Hopefully, it won't be a disaster.
That's the World Cup, though. There's always incidents in the World Cup.
That's
and
true.
We've seen several of them already, leaving a lot of players crying. You see some joy on players' faces that you don't see in their club level, even when they're scoring in big matches. There's a different kind of joy that comes with playing with the World Cup. At the same time, there's a different kind of burden, Dr. Pete. And we are going to go straight into that match. Croatia 3, Argentina 0. Their biggest blowout since 1958.
Wow.
That Argentine team. There have been several tweets sent out by major players saying that this is the worst Argentine team in the last 50 or 60 years. Now, I don't know if that's true because there's so much talent on it, but in terms of a cohesive unit, I'm absolutely positive that that's true. And when you're looking at this team and this match in particular, Argentina came in with heavy weight on their shoulders after Messi missing his PK in the previous match. Did you see Messi during the warm-ups or during the anthem?
Yeah, he looked like someone that was having a panic attack.
He had his hand over his face. He was like rubbing his temples during the anthem when the camera's 3 inches from his face. Everybody knows what you need to do there, Dr. Pete. You just sit there and you belt out the anthem like it's the only song you've ever heard in your life. And if you don't, you get all this pressure on you. But I've never seen a player do that. And it looked to me like he was just a little overawed by the whole thing.
The amount of weight on his shoulders and the way his team's been playing. Just coming into this game, the tension in the squad and the atmosphere was incredible. And I think that Croatia really took advantage of that. And these are two teams that came in with similar problems that they brought in with them from qualifying. They both had coaching turnover during the qualifying period. They had struggles during qualifying and sort of eked in. And whereas one side, Croatia, they've managed to sort it out, get everybody on the same page. Argentina is the exact opposite, and it's been a complete disaster for them.
Yeah, disaster is one way to put it. The other way you could put it is dumpster fire. Like, this is an absolute train wreck. I got more phrases if you want them, but I mean, everything that you can possibly think of. At the same time, we will get into it a little bit more later, they're not out of it. Let's stick with this game for now. My headline for this one, Dr. Pete: Modric and company decimate Argentina.
Yeah, and we've been waiting for Modric in that midfield to really show up and show their quality, and they really did in this one. They just finished off Argentina. Their game plan was perfect. They double-teamed Messi, and Argentina had no answers for their game plan. And it was very clear to me after this game that Argentina has, although they have a lot of talent on their roster, they have many holes in their squad, oh, yeah. The biggest of which is Shotgun Willie in the goal. He is horrific.
Willie Caballero for sure with an absolute howler in this one that really set the tone for the game. He was trying to lob the forward, right? I guess?
I think, like, he was trying to lob himself.
Yeah. The ball gets passed back to him, and Willie Caballero attempts to lob the forward coming in, Rebic, and instead of lobbing him, just pops the ball straight up to him. Rebic is about 15 yards away from the goal and about 5 yards away from Caballero, and takes the lob in stride, a terrific side volley that you could see that going wide or over or something like that, but really slams it over the top of Caballero. And it's not like Argentina deserved anything from this match, so, you know, that's not what decided it. It was a big deal in the match, obviously, but Argentina came unglued. You mentioned that Messi was double-teamed. So basically what Croatia did was they took their three midfielders that were sitting there. That would be Brozovic, Modric, and Rakitic. And they had a triangle, which they would normally have anyways. What they did was they took Messi, who was playing at the 10 and playing underneath the forward. They took Messi and they actually rotated as a unit, passing off Messi and leaving him in between them so that he had no way to get any passes. And he was completely anonymous in this match. Completely anonymous. He never got fed anything. And probably the biggest point of contention for the Argentines would be that their players after the game were furious about the game plan because they couldn't get Messi involved and they didn't change anything.
I don't even know why they have a coach on the sideline. Yeah. Because he's completely ineffective. And Messi had 49 touches in that game, and only two of them came in the opposition box. And that's definitely credit to Croatia that they were able to keep him out of there. And that's incredible. Argentina just couldn't adjust to that. Even though you have Aguero, who you pull off in the 70th minute, which is absurd to me. I hate it when coaches pull their best players out in the 70th minute. And don't tell me he's gassed, because he didn't look gassed. You just didn't have any game plan that utilized him properly.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with that. Jorge Sampaoli, the manager in question that we're discussing, I mean, you have to say that not only was his the changes that he made from the previous game, were they ineffective? But also, I mean, when you have your captain covering his face, clearly his pep talk was ineffective. So you have that level as well. And then when they go down 1-0, the wheels just came off at that point. And did you see the all-out formation they were attempting at the end when they were down 1-0? And then basically, I mean, Croatia was ripping them to shreds because they were pushed all the way up. I mean, you need to get a goal there, but you can't go down by 3 goals. You drew the first match. You're not out of it. But the all-out attack, that allowed them to go down by 2 more goals, which were a joke. I mean, Modric's goal was a beauty, but the build-up to that, they could have scored 3 more times besides that. I mean, Modric's just happened to be an absolute thumper where he beat Otamendi, but the third goal was a joke.
Yeah, and this was basically showing you exactly what Sampaoli is, which is a one-trick pony. when he was coaching for Chile, he had a system where he had three backs and had high pressure up front and basically win the ball back with numerical supremacy in the final third, basically suffocating a team, kind of like what Manchester City plays. And yeah. That worked for Chile with the personnel that they had. He went to Sevilla, did the same thing, and worked with the personnel they had. And then he came to Argentina, and he figured out that he did not have the personnel to play that kind of system. He initially tried that. They lost a bunch of games, or drew a bunch of games. And then he tried to adjust the system, and he's been adjusting it ever since he was put in as a coach.
Every game.
So yeah. They really have no idea what they're supposed to be doing. And that was very apparent in this one. So they tried to high press at the end, and they
that
got
terrible.
Shredded to pieces.
That was so bad. Yeah, the press, I mean, it just goes to show you, and the press is really popular right now in world football. You know, Manchester City took a season where they had to figure it out. They finished in third place with zero medals the first year with Pep Guardiola. Very similar with Klopp his first year at Liverpool. They finished like eighth or something like that. I can't remember what it was. But Klopp finished poorly as well his first year. And that's because it takes a lot of time and research and drilling into your players to get that tactic correct. And we saw today what happens when you're not organized enough. You just get ripped to shreds by a midfield that was brilliant, honestly. You have to say that. Can't take anything away from Croatia's midfield, especially Rakitic and Modric. How did you feel about Modric's goal, beyond the fact that it's his trademark thumper that he hits, pokes the ball a little bit wide from the center, and smashes a curving ball into the near post, but mainly it's from the center. It's just an unbelievable finish. What were your thoughts on Otamendi and the tournament he's had so far?
We talked about this in our preview. I don't think Otamendi is a great defender. And what I mean by that is he does not play defense well. He's a better offensive defender, which works for Manchester City, where he doesn't have to play that much defense. But in the games this season where he was forced to play defense, which was most of the Liverpool games, he got shredded up. Especially with this Argentina squad, he's gotten exposed just like we thought he would. And I thought that Rojo was a decent partner for him in the last game. I didn't think the defense played that bad last game, but for some reason he took Rojo out for this one, and their defense looked atrocious.
Yeah, really poor across the board from Argentina. Now we move into the locker room after the 3-0 beatdown. Directly after the game, Messi's body language is the same. He looks so done. He looks done with Argentina's whatever's going on behind
the
closed
doors. I think he hates soccer right now, Thomas.
Yeah, but he doesn't hate soccer when he plays for Barcelona, but he seems to really hate soccer when he plays for Argentina. And you were saying that a couple of your friends that are Argentina fans and are Argentine, you know, they have a phrase that means the weight of the national team jersey in Argentina is too heavy for Messi. And we, you know, I've already talked about it once. I'll talk about it again here. I mean, it is heavy, but Maradona's team was way better than Messi's team. Like, that's just the way it is. Messi has Kun Aguero and Higuain and all these superstars that can play up top, but their defense is bad. Javier Mascherano is 36, pushing 37. He plays in China now. He's done. You don't have anyone else there, and you have Otamendi, who doesn't like defending and is used to having the game played in front of him, like not having a lot of pressure on him, and he's proven time and time again that he is willing to allow a goal a game, you know, if you put pressure on him, and he did in this one. Modric beats him to score. Now we have talks of mutiny, Dr. Pete, with Sergio Aguero, who is probably one of my favorite athletes in the world because of the way he handles his business. Never hear anything from his camp about trying to get a new contract, about complaining about managers and all that kind of stuff. He walks out of the press conference after they ask him, what are you guys going to do about this? What are you going to do about the manager? The manager is saying it was his responsibility, and Sergio Aguero said he can say whatever he wants about the manager, and then walked out. Clearly the team is furious. Now it seems like all the reports that are coming out are saying that They're going to ask Sampaoli to not manage the last game. The players are, which is very interesting to me. They're asking for the assistant, Jorge Burruchaga, to be the manager. Former Argentine World Cup winner in the 80s. So, Dr. Pete, we have, it seems like, mutiny. The last time we had it was France in 2010. Do you think there is any way they can put this back together?
I do think that they can advance to the next round. You know, all they have to do is beat Nigeria, which is definitely possible. I think they'll be favored in that game. And they have to get, you know, there's a little bit of goal differential that it could come down to. But they've been given hope with that Nigeria win over Iceland. The question is, are they going to be able to advance anywhere in the tournament after that? And right now, it certainly doesn't look like that. I heard a terrific interview with Pablo Zabaleta on the BBC World Cup podcast, which is probably the second best World Cup podcast out there. For those who aren't familiar with him, he was on Argentina's 2014 World Cup team that made it to the finals before losing to Germany. And he actually played in a couple of the early qualifying games for Argentina in this World Cup. And right now, he's currently one of the slowest players in the Premier League. But
City legend.
Yeah, but he's someone who has a very interesting perspective, having played with most of these players, recently playing in Argentina. And he had a lot of things to say about this game. The first thing you noticed was that he was completely crushed. Like, he was so depressed about the victory. And that's one of the fun things, like, seeing former players, how excited or how crushed they get when their team loses. I mean, it means so much to them, even though they haven't played for 10, 20 years. Remember when Ruud van Nistelrooy was in the studio?
For ESPN? I think it was 2014.
2014. Like, he couldn't even talk during the Netherlands game.
Yeah, they came back. I remember they came back from the break after a late win, the penalty kicks, I think it was. And his hair was all disheveled, and he was, like, trying to pull himself together. Oh, yeah, that was fantastic.
But back to Zabaleta. So he said a couple things that were interesting to me. He said that in 2014, he didn't think the formation was working. The defenders had a problem with it. They took it to the coach. They adjusted it in the middle of the tournament, and they were able to make it to the finals in that one. So it goes to show you they had a cohesive squad. There was a good interaction between the manager and the players, and that worked well for him. That obviously is not the case this year. He also said he could not understand for the life of him why you would take Aguero off in the 70th minute. His specific point was, if you want to put Higuain in, fine. Put him up top next to Aguero and, you know, figure out your system. He said as a defender, that was a nightmare to him to try to defend both of those, especially if you're going for the win, then why not put those two up top together? It seems like every single move that the Argentine manager made was terrible and backfired.
There's a heavy load to put on Sampaoli for Argentina's performance, but at the same time, there's also some for the players. I think that they played poorly. I think that they haven't done what they needed to do. I'm sure Messi missed a PK. He did put it on frame, but it wasn't a very good PK. In this match, he just wasn't a factor. He's not even worth talking about beyond what we already have, because, you know, a lot of people, that's their headline, is Messi. Again, we said this in the preview. The headline is not Messi.
Mm-hmm.
The headline is the players around Messi, and right now they suck. So they're still in the tournament, though, because Nigeria got a huge result against Iceland, 2-0 Nigeria. My headline for this one, Dr. Pete, Musa granted Argentine citizenship after brace.
Yeah, I'm still, I'm actually in the hospital trying to recover from my seizure that was induced by their home jerseys they were wearing.
Oh, they're the most popular jerseys in the cup.
They're terribly popular right now. And
sold out.
Credit to them. I really liked them before the tournament started. I thought they were a nice underdog, and they didn't show up for the first game against Croatia, but they looked good in this one. I think that even though Iceland looked pretty organized in the first half, they really got broken down in the second half, and Nigeria showed their quality in this one.
Terrific finishes by Musa, for sure, with his, you know, the first one, basically the ball bouncing to him and him hitting a half volley, drilling the ball past the Iceland goalkeeper. I mean, you have to be impressed by that finish. You know, he's been excellent. He's actually the World Cup leading goal scorer for Nigeria with 4 now. His second goal was even better, more of an individual effort where he got the ball dribbled through the Iceland defense beat the keeper with a dribble, and then did the fake shot, which I love. The fake shot when the goalie's already gone, and then all the defenders basically slide past the ball.
It takes
a ton of composure to do that. And you don't see it a lot in the World Cup because there's not a lot of composure in the World Cup. And a terrific finish to take Nigeria through and keep Argentina
alive. He also
hit
the crossbar, too.
Yeah. Really great game for him. Speaking of Musa, you have to include him in the players of the tournament so far. You can't give it to him because he really only had one match, but he definitely is up there for players of the tournament. A couple others I want to mention, and then I would want to get one that you could pick out. Luka Modric for Croatia, 2 goals so far, scored a big penalty kick in their first game. And, of course, that thumper that he hit. Diego Costa for Spain, scores 3 times. Romelu Lukaku, of course, has only played 1 game. Harry Kane and Cristiano Ronaldo. Out of those players, which one would you say has probably had the best World Cup?
I think Cristiano Ronaldo has had the best World Cup so far because he's single-handedly taking his team into the next round, and no one else has done that quite yet. Diego Costa, I think, is next in line. I'm interested to know if you think that Modric is now the best attacking midfielder in the world with these performances he keeps putting up.
So he doesn't play attacking midfielder for Real Madrid, but he's so good at both, at defending, and I believe his style of defending is more tactical, where he gets in terrific positions for defending. His dribbling style is that kind of conservative style where you just don't lose the ball. You know, he's not going to beat you with a step over or something like that. He's just going to get that little touch right in before you get to him that gets the ball where he needs it. His passing style is clean. He has through balls in him, but he does a lot of possession passing, and his shooting is superb. So in terms of being one of the best attacking midfielders in the world, I think that he absolutely is one of the best center midfielders in the world and has now just shown his quality as an overall midfielder, an all-around midfielder, and is able to drop in that spot. And he's always been voted in the World Team of the Year. I mean, not always, but several times because of his style and how clean he is. So I absolutely think so, to answer your question. So keeping with that Nigeria-Iceland game, Musa puts 2 through, and the actual overall play of this, I felt bad for Iceland. I thought they were well organized, especially in the first half, but the Nigerians came through with their pace, and you know, they wanted the game, and they took it. 3 points for Nigeria. It opens up the group a lot here. It bears noting that Iceland also missed a PK in this one.
Sigurdsson.
Yeah, one
Our
of the
boy.
Best PK takers. Popped it over the crossbar. Just, you know, that's when the game was officially over. Really tough for the Iceland fans here. And, I mean, Iceland's on the ropes. They're in trouble. They have 1 point. Nigeria has 3 points. Argentina has 1 point. Iceland's goal differential is -2. Argentina's is -3. So, in order for Argentina to get through to the next round, which is very doable, they need to beat Nigeria. Right?
Correct.
And Iceland has to lose unless Argentina scores enough goals. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes. So you got to watch their goal differentials. Argentina.
Give me some scoreboard watching during that game.
Mm-hmm. Argentina has to beat Nigeria, which is not going to be easy, especially with the way they're playing right now. I am with you. I believe in World Cup magic. I believe in Messi, and I believe that they will find a way. But at the same time, I could totally see them losing 2-0 and getting caught out on a goal and maybe Willie Caballero tossing the ball to somebody on the other team again.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. That's going to be fun to watch. And I'll tell you, we're setting up for a lot of great third games in this round.
The third games are coming soon. Brazil 2, Costa Rica 0. My headline for this one, Coutinho the hero Brazil needs.
Tom, I have a soft spot in my heart for Los Ticos. It's the only nation that I know of that doesn't have an army. And
oh, that's cute.
It's one of the few countries that actually likes Americans, or at least pretends to like Americans.
Yeah, plus you went to the honeymoon.
Yeah, I went there for my honeymoon. I mean, it's just a great country, really nice people. And I was really pulling for them in this one. I wanted to see them knock off Brazil. I thought they had a great game plan coming in. They saw what Switzerland did and tried to mirror slowing down the game and, you know, fouling tactically. And it worked for 90 minutes. It was very close, and they had a couple of you know, half chances towards the end, this would have been one of the biggest victories for them in their country's history if they had pulled it out. And I was sad to see Brazil score in the 91st minute, and then they celebrated like they'd won the World Cup.
Yeah, Neymar breaking down in tears after the game. Yeah, 90 minutes for Costa Rica holding up against Brazil. The only thing I'll say about that is, Pete, that, you know, I was rooting for the underdog too, just as a, you know, you're a neutral and you want to see interesting
go CONCACAF. Except Mexico.
And watching Brazil, they had their flicks on and it looked like they were going to win. Jesus hits the crossbar. I really didn't like Costa Rica's time-wasting strategy late. It honestly, it turned me off so much that I ended up rooting for Brazil to win, because I'm just like, this is some of the worst and most embarrassing soccer I've ever seen. Well, did you see when the two Costa Rica guys went down at the same time?
Yeah, they didn't know each other, were trying to waste time.
They're just lying on the ground, rolling around. One of them got his head brushed by Marcelo off the ball, and the other one had hardly a collision with, I think it was Neymar. And that, to me, that was awful. I was really embarrassed for Costa Rica, and I understand the tactics. I get what you're trying to do, but also, they're still kicking Neymar and kicking everybody at the same time. Like, it was that, to me, put me over the top. I really didn't want to see Costa Rica continue after that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you watch Brazil in the later rounds, they're going to do the same exact thing.
And I will hope for them to lose when they do.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's just something that a lot of the teams do, especially in Central and South America. But I thought Brazil really struggled in this one. I'm sure their fans are starting to get really antsy because this is two games where they really haven't played to their potential. And their fans not only expect them to win, but they expect it to be, you know, classic Brazilian football. And we've said this before, I don't think Neymar is 100% fit, and it's showed up on the pitch. He's missed two or three not easy, but shots that he normally makes. And he just hasn't had quite the same touch and quickness that I've seen him employ previously, and he hasn't been their best player.
No, Coutinho has been that. He scored the big goals and put them through. That being said, I mean, this could be a starting point for Brazil. You could see Brazil take off from here. And that was in my notes. I thought that they played better than they did in the first match. And that honestly, you know, if they get it rolling, they could be fine. They could get that. You know, I think they're definitely going to get through. And you saw what it meant to them when after the final whistle blew.
Yeah, Tom, I'm getting a little tired of watching Brazilians cry in the soccer field.
Yeah.
So Neymar went down in February. He started crying like a baby when he had his injury. Jesus went down maybe a month or two later, crying like a baby.
That was terrible.
And he was back in like
four matches.
2 weeks. They got slaughtered by Germany. Everybody's crying all over the pitch. I mean, come on. At some point, you got to stop crying and start playing soccer.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see more of it because they're going to get farther in the games. And I think that you'll see, you know, the good side of Brazil coming up. And I think that you'll see some of that, too, for sure.
You beat Costa Rica in extra time. Those are warranted tears.
I guess that's probably true. Some more tears were cried in the next match. Portugal 1, Morocco 0. To me, the headline for this one is Morocco beats Portugal but loses to Ronaldo.
Yeah, actually, Morocco has not played bad. They've outplayed both of their opponents in their first two matches, and they've really gotten unlucky. I thought Portugal was poor in this one. They had to have Ronaldo bail them out. And I don't think Portugal's going very far in this tournament, Tom. I think are in danger of getting knocked out in the round of 16. As soon as Ronaldo doesn't score a goal in one of their matches, they're toast.
Yeah, he is the current golden boot leader with 4, next to Agui, obviously, own goals with 5. But yeah, I mean, what else can you say? He scores a goal, and that was the extent of the highlights to me. There was some talk after the match. The Morocco manager was complaining that Pepe threw a pick, essentially, took out 2 Morocco defenders on that. Did you see that or have any comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, what do you expect from Pepe? He always plays with a ton of class and gets away with He's the type of guy that can get away with one even when VAR is watching with 100 cameras.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he gets away with one, and then a little bit later he doesn't. usually, you know. He usually ends up with a red card before the end of the tournament. And I think that'll happen in this one as well. Yeah, not a lot to say beyond that. Corner kick comes in. Ronaldo diving header top corner. I mean, he was basically unmarked. You could say it's because Pepe threw that pick in there. But Portugal is very poor in this one. Morocco should have their heads high, but they are out of the tournament now. And, I mean, not a lot to really say about them. Just, to me, bad luck. They had an own goal scored against them in the 93rd minute. And, you know, that's how they lost to Iran, and then a 1-0 loss to Portugal. But they weren't expected to do much. You just would have, you know, in this match especially, they could have gotten some points out of it.
Yeah, it's been a tough week for them, Tom. Just over a week ago, they lost the bid to the United States for the World Cup, and they're already going home after less than a week. That's the worst part about the World Cup. You wait 4 years for it, and your team could it be going home in less than a week. It's really pretty depressing in that sense. But one quick thing about that U.S. World Cup bid, Tom. I was going to ask you, do you know what the average attendance was for the World Cup games in 1994 in the United States?
I know they played in the Rose Bowl. They played in a lot of football stadiums, so I bet it was pretty big overall.
So if you look at the attendance for other World Cups, you know, it's been in the 35 to 50,000 person range average for each game. For the U.S. 1994 World Cup, it was 69,000 was the average attendance. So if you're wondering why the U.S. got the bid in 2026, that's one reason why. Nobody else can guarantee that kind of attendance, and it's just going to be higher for the next one.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty awesome. We're really excited about it, especially to see these football stadiums get crammed in. And there's a possibility, although I doubt it, that Baltimore might get some games.
Question I had for you, I have no idea what the answer to this is. Do you think that if you have season tickets to, say, the Baltimore Ravens, and there's a game at the Baltimore Stadium, do you think they get first dib for tickets? They should, right?
They do for international friendlies. They do for club friendlies.
Shouldn't there be a pool for the World Cup that they get drawn into?
I would guess that season ticket holders would get an advantage, and like 1 day advantage or something like that. So yeah, it's a distinct possibility. And football PSLs, private seat licenses, season tickets for American football, they're pretty cheap right now. You could probably pick them up and maybe get a chance to get some World Cup tickets. I don't know the answer to that, but it'd be worth looking into.
Saying, we might have to make some investment. Friends with season tickets.
Yeah, we have a friend who's always watching the market with season tickets, so maybe we'll have to get on him. The next match that we'll cover in the same group, Spain versus Iran. Spain 1, Iran 0. Spain win ugly over stout Iran. Part of the reason I say Spain wins ugly is because Diego Costa scored the goal. Is that mean?
That is mean, Thomas. And
it was an ugly goal.
He is not the most handsome man, but he's been scoring at will in the tournament so far, and he's been a lot of fun to watch.
Poor Iran in this one, although you have to say they benefited from that amazing Augie in the first match against Morocco, so I don't feel too bad for them. They defended really well. They absorbed pressure really well in this one. That was clearly their game plan. And then Costa scores like a shin ball goal. Ball bounces off him on a ricochet for his third goal of the tournament. And, you know, Iran is in trouble right now. They could still get through.
They've got 3 points.
Yeah, they could still get through, but it's going to be tough.
They've got to somehow eke past Portugal. And I think Spain is one of those teams that's not firing all cylinders yet, but you definitely see the potential that they have. And I think they're going to cause a lot of problems for teams in the later rounds, especially assuming that De Gea gets back up to where he plays at his club level, which I think he will. Yeah. And it's really fun watching Isco.
Yeah, he is. He's money.
I really like watching him in the middle of the park, and he's just so quick and silky smooth with the ball.
I mean, his dribbling skills, his passing skills all around. I'm surprised that he hasn't had more impact on the games in terms of the scoreline, but at the same time, he's had impact. So, moving on to Switzerland versus Serbia. This game was really good. I thought it was going to be a draw coming into it. Switzerland 2, Serbia 1. Shaqiri scores late to sink Serbia.
Yeah, I've always liked Shaqiri, watching him play for Stoke. I always thought that if he had better talent around him. He could be like a Hazard-type talent, and he's looked pretty good so far in the World Cup. Do you think he's going to end up staying with Stoke, or do you think if he has a decent World Cup, he's going to end up on a better team in the Prem?
So, Shaqiri has played already for Inter Milan when they were better than they are now, and Bayern Munich. He's already moved to big teams, and he didn't do well there. He has some holes in his game, for sure. And I do think he's going to move. He came out in the press and said, I don't want to play for Stoke anymore. Stoke got relegated, and that's understandable. I think he moves on. Now, the rumors to Liverpool, I think, are not going to happen. I don't think
where's he
going to
fit in there?
Yeah, I don't see him there. I see him on like an Everton-type team somewhere in the mid-table for the Prem, and a team that will stay up if he wants to stay in the Prem, and I think he will because his wages will be higher in the Prem. So, yeah, I do think he gets a move, but I don't think he goes to, like, PSG, Real Madrid, Barcelona, somewhere like that. I don't think he moves to one of those clubs.
Yeah, it was interesting. This was the first game at the World Cup where a team came from behind to win.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which I'm surprised that that hadn't happened to this point. Mitrovic in this one, a guy who I hadn't heard much about before the tournament, he had a terrific game. He looked great. Impressive aerial prowess. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. probably should have had a penalty when he got sandwiched by two Swiss players and the ref waved it off. Not sure why they didn't look at it with VAR, but...
No, that was strange to me, too.
He's been terrific for Serbia. He's had 13 goals, 2 assists in their last 15 games.
That's a hell of a line.
Fresh off of helping Fulham get promoted. So yeah. he, to me, has been a really solid player.
He has been for sure. In this one, the much maligned Xhaka, at least maligned to me, because I think that he's a big part of why Arsenal was so bad this year. And, you know, we talk about how often he shoots from range. He gets a bounce out today.
I made fun of him last episode about his shots outside the box.
He hits like the hardest ball in the history of soccer balls. Smashes a shot that the goalkeeper had no chance for. He was a little bit screened, the goalkeeper was, but I don't know if you're stopping that anyways. That ball is hit so hard.
Yeah, get ready for 99 misses now.
Yes, yes. Now you have to sit tight for the rest of the misses that are inevitably going to happen. Switzerland with a big result there. They win 2-1 over Serbia, and it looks like the Swiss will go through here. I mean, it's going to be close. But that was a huge win to take them to 4 points. And they look like if they can get a draw or maybe even not even need a draw, they could be through. So terrific.
Still win the group too.
Yeah, and they can win the group. Another scrappy match that we saw. Denmark won, Australia won. And my headline in this one, Aussies still punching in the World Cup.
Yeah, they always show up. I can't remember them playing a game in the last 2 or 3 World Cups where they just got annihilated. I mean, they fought back in this one. Eriksen scored early. You thought it might be a rout after that. And they hung in there and they scraped out a point. I thought this was a really evenly balanced match. And I think that's a good group. I really think there aren't any teams in that group that are weak. And again, I'm really looking forward to that third game.
Yeah, we got a lot of good games coming up there, for sure.
Denmark has impressed me. I thought they were, before the tournament, I thought they were a one-person team in Eriksen because he'd done so much for them in qualifying. But they've got some very talented players on their squad. And they got Christensen in the center-back position. They've got Schmeichel in the goal. So they could make some noise in the next round.
Denmark here plays a nice brand of football. Eriksen scores a beauty in this one. You knew that his quality would come through there. I love Australia's fight, though. I just want to reiterate that. I love their fight. They get a penalty here. They're a team that I like watching. You know, they're not on the ground a lot. And maybe that's just our style of football because they play a lot like our team does. You know, it's more of a sum of their parts and heart kind of thing than it is an individual brilliance at any time. But I really enjoy watching Australia, and I've always felt like they got hard done in the first match. They should have gotten a point against France at least. And, you know, it's nice to see them still in it. This group as it sits right now, France is through with 6 points. Denmark has 4 points. Australia has 1 point, and Peru has 0. It's going to take something for Australia to get through, but it's possible.
Yeah, I definitely could see them sneaking through against, they've got a game against Peru, so
yeah, they have
Peru
to win that.
May give up. And Denmark has a tough, you know, France hasn't been firing on all cylinders, but if they come out and just destroy Denmark, which is a possibility, then you might see Australia sneak through.
Yeah, especially with the way they fight. The way they fight, I think that they're going to show up for that last game. They're going to win that last game, and at the very least, they'll go out with their heads high. I think they have a chance to get through. Denmark has a lot of quality, and depends on which France shows up, right?
Absolutely.
France 1, Peru 0 in this one, and you'd have to expect before this match that there would be more goals from a team like France against Peru. That's not no slight against Peru. I mean, Peru came out of the CONMEBOL with Argentina, Brazil, and Chile, and Uruguay. I mean, to get through that group in qualifying is difficult, and you have to have quality. They're very well organized, and they played well. The difference in this one is the headline. Mbappe sends Peru out and France through. Did you see the goal?
Yeah, I saw the goal.
Yeah, so Giroud gets through. Great pass from, I think it was Griezmann. One-on-one with the keeper, a little bit of pressure on his shoulder, smashes the ball at the keeper. The ball takes a ricochet and goes over the keeper's head and is bouncing. It's right on the goal line, but there is a player in pursuit beyond Mbappe who's right there. You let that ball roll in, or are you putting that away?
Are you kidding me?
It was like a foot away. You had to put it away, but it was, if I'm Giroud, I got a little issue with
it. I'm like diving header before that ball gets over the line for a World Cup goal.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Right on the edge of the goal.
Giroud's not happy.
No, he's not happy.
Speaking of Giroud, with all the talent that France has, did you notice that they went with the old tried and true Arsenal tactic of bringing Giroud in and just driving balls up and letting them bring him down and play off of
him? He was amazing. He was so good in that game. He was dominating the Peru defenders and just dropping balls all over the turf.
He's so good at what he
does. His chest. Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was spectacular in this match. And Pogba as well. Pogba was a driving force in this one. Had one of those games where you're like, oh man, this guy is one of the best midfielders in the world, where he keeps the ball from everybody, gets a couple shining moments in with his dribbling and his passing and, you know, a little bit of flair here and there. I thought Pogba was brilliant in addition to Giroud. And France looked a lot more cohesive in this one. They just probably would want more goals. But again, Peru, very well organized and very well respected as a team.
Yeah, I think France will get a good test their next game out against Denmark. Denmark's going to be fighting for their life to try to get to the next round. So it'd be a good test for them, and we'll see how good they are.
Yeah, the game threes are coming up soon. We have to finish out the last few of match two, but the game threes are coming up. They're going to be awesome. Last match we'll cover, probably the ugliest one, Dr. Pete. Uruguay 1, Saudi Arabia 0. Headline here. Suarez strike settles a poor match.
Yeah, this was not a fun match to watch. And Uruguay just has not impressed me at all. They have so much quality up top, and they've got some great center backs. But in the middle of the park, there's just not a lot there to me that gets me excited. I just don't see them, the way they're playing, getting past the round of 16 or into the quarterfinals. I just don't. Unless Cavani and Suarez play the games of their life, I just don't see it happening.
But I mean, the other thing to take into account, though, is that that is kind of their style. They've always been like that. They win on free kicks. And you know, even with those two running around up top, they don't win a lot of matches with beautiful play. They're really gritty. And you know, there's something to be said about being a tournament team that can take a 1-0 win, even if it's against a Saudi Arabia team that, in my opinion, was vying to be one of the worst ever.
Yeah, I think that's generally true, but this is such a bad Saudi Arabia team. Come out of there with one Saudi Arabia team. Come out of there with a 1-0 win. It's a win, but they're going to have to play better. Otherwise, they're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, we will see what happens as we go forward in this one. Uruguay looks like they're going to get through with a couple squeakers. I mean, they are through. Excuse me. They are through. Saudi Arabia is eliminated. Those matches won't matter much. But you do have a match three, Uruguay versus Russia. And you have to say that, I mean, will Russia be favored?
I don't think they'll be favored in the game in terms of Vegas odds, but they could easily win that game. And Russia, to me, is a very dangerous team right now.
I agree.
Whoever they play in the round of 16, I would be scared because they're going to be playing with house money in front of their own crowd. That is a scary team. You might have a repeat of that South Korea team.
Yeah. All right, so the matches as they come up here, we have Belgium versus Tunisia, South Korea versus Mexico, Germany versus Sweden. Three very interesting matches for different reasons. Belgium playing a plucky Tunisia team. You'd expect Belgium to run over Tunisia, but as we saw in the England game, Tunisia has a little more fight in them than a lot of people would expect, and you never know what could happen in that match. I would not bet heavily on the Belgium team, just because I think Tunisia has more fight than we give them credit for. South Korea, Mexico. For this one, this is a time when Mexico could lay their egg that they do in the tournament. You know, they come off a high win, and this would be a conventional trap game, wouldn't you say?
Mexico's won one game, Thomas. They have 3 points, and everybody is acting like they won the World Cup. And they're historically a very inconsistent team. So show me something for 3 games. Get yourselves out of the round of 16, and I'll be more impressed. Congratulations, you beat Germany. It was a great game. Probably going to win the group, but if you don't make it to the quarterfinals, well, you're the same place you were 4 years ago and 4 years before that.
4 years before that, 4 years before that, and just keep going with that. Spoken like a true rival, Pete. We absolutely will not give Mexico any more credit than they deserve. South Korea here, though, did not have a shot in the first half of their last match, so they may not be the team to trip over. On the other hand, a massive match, Germany versus Sweden. Sweden, well-organized. Sweden, not a team that gets taken out too many times by a 3-goal margin or anything like that, and Germany is desperate.
Yeah, I think you're going to see the Germans bounce back in this one. And if they don't bounce back, they're going to be going home. So
yeah.
I've got my popcorn ready for this one, 2 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. We also have on Sunday, Poland versus Colombia, Senegal versus Japan, and England versus Panama. Those games are actually in reverse order because I want to talk about England for a second. Did you see the story about the media member of the English media who took a picture and zoomed in on one of the assistant coaches' the clipboards to get the what he thinks is the starting lineup for the next match?
What is wrong with them? Like, what exactly are you trying to do? Like, break the story that whatever the starting lineup is for the next game that's going to be introduced in 2 days? What exactly are you trying to achieve by that? And I loved Gareth Southgate's comments basically saying, are you guys for us or against us? Like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat there. I don't understand why you would want to take apart your national team, why you would want to attack them. We discussed it in the preview. Their media, there's no fandom in their media. There's no respect in their media. And I just don't understand why you would want to be such an asshole that you don't want your team, your national team, to move forward. You want to give them some kind of, this is like a half story too. It's not even like a major story. It may or may not be the lineup, but why break it at all? Why go through the pain of doing that? Are there that many people in that country who care enough to see the lineup 2 days early? Is it really going to get you that many more clicks? I think that's terrible.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't understand what their problem is, but obviously it's been going on for a very long time and it's not going to change.
Yeah, credit to Gareth Southgate. He killed the story, in my opinion. Him and Kyle Walker did when they just said, are you for us or against us? It's a non-story as far as we're concerned. Whether or not it's the lineup or not, you know, they said that it's not the lineup and all this other stuff, but I don't think it matters, and I think that just the idea that you would do that against your own national team for such a paltry story is a real credit to the scumbag that did it in the first place. I'm not even going to mention his name. It's not worth it. But looking forward, again, the big matches are coming up. Round 3. This is when the matches, Dr. Pete, are played at the same time. So I don't know what strategy you're going to have here, but all the matches in the group are played at the same time. For instance, Group A, Uruguay versus Russia, Saudi Arabia versus Egypt is 10 a.m. here. And then that follows up by the 2 o'clock game, Spain, Morocco, Iran, Portugal. They do that to keep from teams having nothing to play for. So that'll be really interesting. That's coming up with the match threes, and you know, we'll be on top of that.
Yeah, I've got my plan set up. When I'm in clinic, I have 2 phones. I have a work phone and my regular phone, and they're going to be propped up on my desk with 1 game on each, and I'm going to be listening to the games in between listening to the patients while cutting them off during their interview and watching both games.
So it's probably best not to go to Dr. Pete until after July, after mid-July or so. It's probably, if you have any colorectal concerns, maybe to stay away or seek help elsewhere. But yeah, so the World Cup looking good right now. A lot of interesting points to be made. A lot of drama. Argentina, Brazil, Germany, teams that are on the ropes. A couple teams that have been eliminated. And, you know, a fantastic golden ball hunt. Own goal, Augie, still in front, but Cristiano Ronaldo right behind him, and a ton of great matches coming up. I don't know how on earth we're going to be able to survive employment with this, but just a lot of stuff to look forward to, as the World Cup always is. For Dr. Pete, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week, and let's enjoy the rest of the first round matches as we move into the knockout stages. Thank you.